connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
We continue where we last left off our spooky story.
The two podcasters finally returned home with their GameCube, the Game Boy Advance Player, the AV cables, the power cables, and the monitor used to play the GameCube and the pizza rolls.
Yes, they did go back and purchase pizza rolls so they could eat.
Nothing important happened while they were busy getting pizza rolls.
Yes, this isn't like a you know, children.wmv situation. There just wasn't anything important happening.
There wasn't even like a cool dog, which would be worth mentioning. It was just pizza rolls there and back.
Yeah, it was broom closet ending all the way down.
Right. Except for the part where they did get locked in a broom closet and had to break their way out of the broom closet using a series of techniques they learned from watching Scooby-Doo.
Yes, but besides that, really nothing to write home about. But anyway, So when they finally got home, they decided to set up the GameCube. But unfortunately, the worst possible thing happened.
They forgot to grab the disc of Custom Robo.
So one of the podcasters said to the other, well, PoBuddy's nerfed, and they decided to play Super Smash Bros. Melee instead.
But when one of them tried to wave dash, they fell through the floor of the level.
They said, wait a minute, we're not playing on Battlefield that infamously has a floor that you can actually, like, clip through, and it was legal for a very long time. Something's up.
Battlefield is still legal. Wait, are you from the future? Said the other.
Oh no, said the other podcaster. My secret has been revealed. So he dissipated into a fine mist.
As his continued existence would cause a paradox.
But when he dissipated into a mist, like that one scene from the Avengers where people dissipate into dust, he left behind a peculiar symbol.
It was about the size of a normal hi-hat, except it was not a hi-hat. It was slightly higher in the depth of the symbol itself, and it could not be affixed to a drum kit.
And on that symbol was engraved a man, a plan, canal, Panama, but it was in a ciphered language.
The other podcaster, who still remained, now the sole podcaster, said to himself, how am I going to podcast with just myself? You can't have a one-person podcast. Nobody will listen to that. So they called up their buddy Cypher from Valorant.
And Cypher from Valorant came in, and he sounded exactly like he does in the video game. Because we all know Cypher from Valorant. We've all listened to his voice before, or her voice, or their voice. And, you know, we all know their classic catchphrase, hey, it's me, Cypher, spaghetti.
Of course, Cypher did not say the catchphrase spaghetti and meatballs, as that would have been too much of a reference to an existing person on the internet.
Yes, they could sue over that. But anyway, so the podcaster and Cypher decided to look at this symbol and saw this cool cypher.
And when they hit this crash symbol, not only did the symbols crash, but the game crashed as well. That's when they realized they were in a video game the whole time, and the two podcasters found themselves back in the Schnucks, which, as we all know, is a local grocery store chain.
And Cypher said, hey, you know, we probably should have seen this coming. You know, I am a video game character, so we probably should have seen that this was always a video game the whole time.
And we've been doing 4 minutes of that. We are NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am, of course, Matt, and with me is my co-host,
Galen.
Not Cypher, sadly. He had to leave after we recorded that.
Yes, the timeline has been fixed, and I am back.
Right. The paradoxes have been filled in, a la a certain house-based series. I'm talking, of course, about about Ask This Old House. Said, all right, we're gonna have to patch up these paradoxes, so let me go grab my hammer and some fresh new drawers. which are, of course, made of mahogany.
So today we have a topic that is still within the theme of Spooky Month.
Not only Spooky Month, Spooky Video Games Month.
Yes, and not only Spooky Video Games Month, but Spooky Video Games That Don't Exactly Exist Month.
Yes, yeah, Spooky Video Games That Don't Exactly Exist and have videos present on YouTube of them.
We are, of course, talking about the incredibly popular ARG slash video game that does not exist, and we're going to edit in, you know, a joke where I say, like, you know, the thing we're not talking about right here.
Right, yeah.
You can edit that in, right?
Yeah, sure.
Cool. Of course I am joking. We all know that that isn't what we're talking about today. We're talking about Crow 64, or Catastrophe Crow.
Or Catastrophe Crow 64.
Or Catastrophe 64, which I believe is what Quest 64 was called.
Or Whatever Happened to Catastrophe Crow 64.
By Adam Butcher.
Or Whatever Happened to Robot Jones from Cartoon Network.
Or Whatever Happened to Tastations, the famous McElroy Brothers bit.
Or Whatever Happened to Sitcoms, Game Shows on the Radio, a line from Bowling for Soup Song 1985.
Or Whatever
Happened... I almost said 1984. That's a really different Bowling for Soup song.
Or Whatever Happened to Predictability, The Milkman, The Paperboy, and Daytime TV, which is, of course, a line from the song that is the intro to Full House.
Everywhere you look, video game ARGs. So, yeah, continuing this whole thing, we've talked about ARGs, we talked about something that was an ARG, and as we've kind of alluded to, the topic for today is an ARG, but it also has a lot of non-ARG elements. And it has, like, ARG elements. Those weren't really solved, I guess. But so we're gonna kind of just go into what this actually is.
Yeah. So the story starts with what happened to Crow 64, the Adam Butcher video. Adam Butcher, right?
Yeah. Adam Butcher is a filmmaker. He's done a lot of short films before. So I had heard of him first through his short film Internet Story, which came out around 2010, I want to say, which was sort of a not quite found footage. It was kind of like a true crime documentary about somebody on the internet solving a puzzle, but the video itself was a puzzle with an open-ended ending, which is to say it had an open ending. And so, Adam Butcher, not a video game YouTuber or anything, but this video he made is in the style of video game YouTubers. Your Brutal Mooses, your Nitro Rads, probably the most relevant because he does 3D platformers. Your Scott the Woz, which is something we covered. That sort of style.
Yeah. It's also very interesting for being basically one of those videos that, like, you know those YouTube videos that get randomly recommended from a channel you've never heard of that just sort of, like, blow up one day? It very much feels like one of those videos. I had seen this without ever knowing who Adam Butcher was, and it feels like tailor-made to, like, be that kind of video. Because, like, without seeing any of his other repertoire, you would have no idea that this wasn't the regular type of video he made.
Yeah. The video tells about a game called Crow 64, or Catastrophe Crow, which was being produced by a company called Opus Interactive, helmed by the eccentric Manfred Lorenz.
Manfred Lorenz wanted to create this Crow-like 3D platformer, sort of like it was inspired by his daughter's drawings. And he was, like you said, a sort of eccentric name in the industry. And it was looking to be sort of like, it was looking to come out on the cusp of, you know, Mario 64, Super Mario 64. And so it was looking to be this incredible, like, you know, step forward in the platformer genre. But it kept getting delayed and kept getting delayed. You know, shareholders kept, you know, being like, hey, when's it coming out? And, you know, changes in Manfred Lorenz's behavior started to, become more and more known by employees of the company.
Right. Eventually, he laid off every other employee. Presumably, the company just ran out of funding. And by 2000, the game basically became vaporware. Never finished.
Yeah. Manfred Lorenz would eventually sort of like, you know, just kind of up and leave his home. The address to the Opus Interactive, like, studio would eventually just lead to an empty warehouse. And Manfred Lorenz's body, I believe, was eventually found, like, in his boat off of the coast. Or no, his boat was found.
His boat was found off the coast of Germany. It wasn't an empty warehouse. It was specifically an empty office building.
Yeah.
And none of the computers or equipment from the company were there when the loaners were there to collect and repossess things.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and Manfred went missing.
And so, basically, nobody was, like, it was just sort of assumed that nobody would have, you know, this game would never be found until Adam Butcher found a developer copy on eBay. Now, I do want to point out, this is not unheard of.
Yeah.
Like, pretty famously, Star Wars Battlefront 3 was, like, 95% close to completion before it was eventually shit-canned. And semi-recently, a couple of years ago, I believe, developer's build was found on a random developer kit of 360 or whatever, of basically the game as it was up to development at that point. So, like, right. Yeah, go ahead.
I believe Glover 2 is another game that happened to. There was going to be a sequel to Glover. And recently there was the original version of Star Fox Adventures, Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah.
That got kind of leaked and released, that prototype version. Nowadays, just like dev carts are kind of the golden goose egg for video game preservationists.
Yeah.
Because they tell a lot about the development and history of the game.
Was that, out of curiosity, was the Dinosaur Planet leak with the, like, big Nintendo leak, or was that separate?
I don't remember.
Ah.
But yeah, so this is a thing that could feasibly happen.
Yeah, which is why it sort of disarms you during this whole video, if you don't have the context of Adam Butcher. So he sets up the shot to get a picture of his CRT playing the game. He plugs in the cart and it boots up basically as normal. It shows like a screen that has, you know, basically like developer sort of code, whatever, just like, you know, a bunch of empty boxes. And then it boots up to the title screen. He plays the game. Now, an interesting thing that he does is, like, at the beginning, he has a lot of commentary, and he sets up the shot, obviously, like, he is, you know, literally filming this for a YouTube video. But as the video goes on, the camera very slowly and very subtly zooms into the TV, and his commentary stops, because it stops being, you know, oh, I'm this quirky YouTuber who's, you know, talking about this lost game, and starts becoming the wacky ARG.
Yes. So, in that sense, what happens is he begins playing the game, he enters the like, building that you see in the main hub world, which is an office building. The player character is this crow with, like, a bandaged wing. When he goes in the office building, he sees a larger crow with glasses running past him. So he follows the crow to a computer, like, monitor model and jumps through it, a la Mario 64, to enter the first world, which is a forest world with some, like, toy blocks around. I guess it's more of a toy world with a grassy floor.
Yeah.
As he's going through it, he finds a bunch of, like, toy blocks kind of set up into a wall jump sort of area. You know, two walls he can bounce between. And when he gets to the top, he sees the large crow programming something in the middle of, like, a pentagram almost.
Yeah.
With, like, chess pawn models around it in a circle. And I think then the game resets.
He talks to the crow.
Right.
And the crow, like, spouts out some gibberish. It's just random words. And then it resets.
Right.
And then he's, like, back at the office. But, like, the framing is different. I think the lighting is different.
Yeah.
when he walks back to where he was, a telephone begins ringing, but, like, you can't interact with it.
Right, yeah. At some point, he gets into the, like, misty forest level, where he follows a path around. I believe he eventually sees that older crow again, and he goes up a hill to where he finds the older crow weeping over a grave.
Yeah.
Then when he goes to leave the hill, he sees these, like, stairs aiming downward. And when he steps on it, the game glitches out severely.
Yeah, the crow is, like, you know, sort of like a Gmod ragdoll, and the camera literally shifts towards that, like, towards that, you know, that ragdoll look, to get closer, and then these two mysterious figures sort of, like, come out of the fog of the game to, like, almost sort of claim the figure, it looks like.
Yeah. And then the game resets again. I believe at this point, when he goes back through the office, he sees the old crow go between two lockers, like, through a wall. And when he follows, he goes to, like, an out-of-bounds area that's really dark. And he sees, eventually, the old crow standing in a boat with a computer in its hands, and he jumps out. And when he does this, he also falls down into, like, some water.
Yeah. It should be noted, at this point, the camera is basically taking, like, the TV is basically taking up the whole camera.
Yeah.
And the commentary has stopped.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of this being just a quirky found footage game is gone, and it's now just full engrossing.
Yeah. Then, that's when the final reset happens, where, he goes back to the hub world, except now the textures are all wrong. It's dark, there's, like, teddy bear textures along the pathways. The grass is all weird and glitchy. The music's, like, slowed down significantly. And I think it has a key shift. And the player turns around and sees a house that looks a lot like Manfred's house. And going into the house, the player kind of loses control, is what it seems like. It should be noted here, they're playing as the older crow.
Yeah.
They run through the house, past the phone, which is, like, off the hook, up the stairs, into a room on the top floor, where you hear this, like, beeping sound, and the sound of, like, somebody on, like, a breathing device.
Yeah.
And then the camera slowly pans over, past all these drawings on the wall, to a, like, realistic-ish dead crow on a bed. And then the room begins to flood. And then the video ends.
It is really fucking well done.
Yeah. The pacing of the video is phenomenal. The, like, realization that something is going on as time progresses is great. The realization of, like, what's actually being mentioned is really interesting. You can honestly piece together a lot of the narrative with this video alone.
Yeah. It is an exceptionally well done video, even just sort of self-contained. Adam Butcher is a really good filmmaker, right, which probably helps.
He's really good at writing these stories where they don't really have a clear, like, defined answer per se, but they give you a lot of evidence to work with. So, you know, what really happened to Manfred? There's a lot of things about jumping into the water and things drowning, you know?
Yeah. The fact that you can sort of, like, intuit, you know, the fact that the computer, that, like, the older crow and the computer both jumped off the boat, you can kind of be like, you know, okay, maybe that's probably why all the stuff was missing.
Yeah.
And that's probably what happened to Manfred Lorenz.
Yeah. The phone being off the hook inside the house is probably why it was ringing so much, or they're connected to that. The stairs that the crow falls over are the same stairs as the stairs in the house. And so you can kind of piece together some aspects. At this point, I think people pretty quickly realize that the crow that the player plays as is representing Manfred's daughter, Taya. And that when the crow falls down the stairs in the Adam Butcher video, that's something that happened to Taya and probably, like, steadily declined her health.
Yeah.
There are references in, like, the interviews or the bits from, like, gaming magazines to, like, Manfred being told to think of the player, and he says, like, the player doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, like, one of his employees, after he keeps delaying the game, is like, think of the player, and he says, like, the player is dead.
Yeah. Manfred, it should also be noted, these interviews have a lot of text that's kind of hard to catch because it goes by really quickly. They're just like magazine scans. But they mention a few interesting things, like the Eternal Revival system, something that isn't explained. In the interview, Manfred says that, like, dying is old-fashioned in video games, and instead, every time you die, instead of, like, losing a life, the game changes slightly. But he said that he hadn't worked out the details at the time. As far as his, like, implementation on the N64 to make it run well, he mentioned that, like, there's rumors of Opus Interactive using black magic, but he just said that was a joke. that they're just really skilled and well-trained programmers. There's a few other interesting things. There's some mentions of levels that aren't, you know, visible yet. There's a mention of a weird pyramid thing with, like, hieroglyphics. All of those, of course, will be found later.
Yes.
Because if you look up Catastrophe Crow on YouTube, other than the stuff about the video series now, but at the time, if you looked it up, you would find other videos from other channels about the game. These were, I don't remember all of them. I know one of them was, like, Retro Gaming Fred, Nintendo 64 Long Lost Lore, like, 3D Platformers New Zealand, but New Zealand spelled NZ. And I think the first one was, like, Retro, something Game Man, like Nintendo Game Man or something. All of them had one video of just a random 3D platformer, and then videos of gameplay of Catastrophe Crow.
Yeah. Also, it should be noted, like, from what the community has pieced together, the, like, random videos that aren't directly related to Catastrophe Crow don't seem, from my understanding, to be connected.
Yeah.
It's not this isn't a Ben Drowned situation of, like, Rose's speech from Bloodlines is very important to the plot.
Yeah, it's more like they exist to give it the appearance of a real channel.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a lot to talk about in these videos, but there isn't a chronological order. I have a few highlights I want to mention, though.
Please go ahead.
Okay, so the first one is that in one of the videos, there is a brief moment where the pause screen has the text changed to gibberish, it seems. But all the letters are replaced one-to-one. There's no, like, extra letters added or anything, which means it's a substitution cipher.
Yep.
Where you replace one letter with another letter, and you just do that for all the letters.
Yeah. The community, I believe, has dubbed this, like, Crow language.
Yeah.
And we can actually use this to backfill into the previous episode some details, like, when there was gibberish, when the old Crow spoke gibberish, he specifically said, "I am in hell."
Yes. A hell of his own making. So that's one thing. There's a few other ciphers that are used commonly, but I do really quick want to mention that the word Crow translates to Taya. The word Taya translates to Nils, which is the name of Manfred's son, and the word Nils translates to Crow. Now, also, do you remember those boxes that Galen mentioned earlier on, like, the startup of the game?
Yeah.
Well, there was a note that Manfred left to his wife. And when you put that note alongside the boxes that are marked off list out Dearest Nils. So Nils is still alive. And there is another cipher at some point that basically says, Nils, I'm alive. So, like, Manfred says he is alive as well. One of the other ciphers, so there is a video where the player Crow does not have a bandaged wing and is able to fly. And they fly on top of the office building, and there is a key, which to me felt like sort of an Ice Key reference, Banjo-Kazooie. But when touching the key, it actually showed a grid of letters and numbers, which form a Vignere cipher. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Which is, a Vignere cipher is essentially, given a keyword, you are given a list of numbers, and the numbers index into the list of letters under each letter of the keyword. So think of it like you have 1 through X, you have A through Z, and then under each column of A through Z is every letter of the alphabet, and maybe then some. So you say like 130 or, you know, 137 is row 1, row 3, row 7. And if you look for the words that are being, you're trying to decipher through, then you use that code. The main words that people use the Vanir cipher for are Crow, Taya, and Nils. The other main cipher, there is a video where a player is going through sort of a cave level, and they come across a computer that has a keyboard with a bunch of symbols on it. Or no, it's a keyboard with a bunch of letters on it, but when you step on each letter, it plays a sound effect.
Yeah.
Each sound effect corresponds to the letter of the keyboard it's on, and when these sound effects appear elsewhere in the ARG, you can decode them into messages.
Okay. I'm thinking of one, there's another cipher, or another, thing in a different video that's, like, it's the similar idea, except that each letter is corresponded to a note.
Right, that's the Ocean Quest cipher.
Yeah.
So, Opus Interactive had made a game before Crow 64 called Ocean Quest. Note that. Ocean Quest, kind of, you know, Manfred going into the ocean. Remember that. But Ocean Quest, people found a video of the end credits theme from Ocean Quest, and, yeah, you can go from there.
Yeah, so the Ocean Quest, like, OST had a couple of videos, most notably the end credits theme.
I think that's the only one.
I thought there were two. But the important thing is that the actual melody translated two letters that were found in a different cipher, and those letters then would spell out, you know, more information for the players.
Yeah. I want to mention specifically that the method to cracking the Ocean Quest cipher was found by, it's like Johannes Leon something, I'm sorry, but when asked if, when somebody commented on the video, like, are you another sock puppet account by Adam Butcher, the guy just responded with eyeball emojis. So this may have been Adam Butcher being like, nobody's going to figure this out. Let's just give them a hint. They didn't deny that they weren't Adam Butcher, you know?
That's fucking great.
The only videos on their account were, like, film tests for, like, different cameras. And so, you know, it could have been an old account Adam had because, you know, he's a filmmaker. Yeah, that's just kind of funny. But yeah. So, the events of the videos, those are a lot of the main things, is that the people found ciphers that they decoded. A lot of them are kind of the same message, though. A lot of it is like, I'm sorry, or I'm in hell, or I am alive, or stuff like that. Some combination. A lot of it is Manfred apologizing to Taya, to Nils, to Marta, his wife.
Yeah, one of the more interesting ciphers is one that just says, whoops, lol, which I think is, you know, it's a little bit out of... little bit, you know, mood killing, but, you know, it's still got to give props to Adam Butcher.
So, yeah, there's one, of course, that says drink your Ovaltine. So, what another interesting video, though, there's two more that I actually want to talk about the video contents of. One of them is, I believe it's the crow that is flying again. They fly upward out of the skybox that they're in, which is actually shaped more like a sky pyramid. If you don't know, in video games, the sky itself is a texture put on a giant model to make it look like a sky. Usually it's a skybox because it's literally a box or a sphere. But it's a triangle, in this case, a pyramid, which is weird. But when they leave the skybox, they're actually on the outside of that weird black pyramid with Egyptian hieroglyphics on it. A lot of ciphers translate to binary numbers that can be plotted onto like a pixelated image to show different pictures. One of them is a key and another one is an ankh. So there's more Egyptian imagery there. The last video I want to mention for now is one of the old crow falling just through multiple levels at a time. They fall through, like, the toy level, then the forest level, then a snow level, then a lava level, the tunnel level, the hub world, and they just keep falling through the models of the levels. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, those are the main videos for now on these channels. And we've skipped over a lot of details, but for the most part, that's the main important stuff. What happens next is sort of where the ARG stuff starts to happen.
Yeah.
And stops to happen.
I don't remember how.
So, each of the four channels has, like, an email listed on their account, but the email doesn't work. But if you combine them as fragments of an email, it works as a functioning email. The reason is because the four names of the account spell out Manfred Lorenz.
Yeah.
Like, the New Zealand NZ is the end of Lorenz. And so by combining the fragments in that order, you get an email for somebody named ML. I wonder who that could be.
Marxist-Leninist.
I was going to say Martin Luther, but that works too.
When you email it, he gives you 99 reasons why fuck the church.
Yeah. He hammers a copy of Catastrophe Crow to your door. So, yeah, people start emailing ML, and it becomes pretty clear that ML is going to be pretty reclusive. People ask, you know, what's the deal with Catastrophe Crow? And ML, presumably Martin, makes a lot of comments of, like, there's too many people looking at this, too many prying eyes. I only want to speak to my son, Nils. And so somebody emails, like, hey, it's me, Nils. What do you want to talk about? And he's like, no, there's too many copycats. You still know your birthday, right? And the day where we vacationed? That should be enough to tell you for me to know that you're Nils. Nobody was able to find a birthday for Nils or any mention of where they vacationed. This is sort of a thing that gets me, is that, yeah, so people would, like, they would message in character as other things. Somebody messaged as the Long Lost Lore account. Somebody messaged as another of the YouTube channels, being like, I've been playing your game on my YouTube channel. Can I ask a few questions? But Manfred just had sly remarks about creations acting on their own.
Yeah, I think the specific wording is like, yet another creation out that's gone out of my control.
Yeah. People messaged as, like, somebody messaged as Marta, and he was just like, the only thing I have to say to you is I'm sorry. Somebody messaged as an old employee of Opus Interactive, and the only thing I have to say is I'm sorry. So nobody could really get any information out of ML or Martin. Manfred, not Martin. Marta is the wife. Yes. Manfred. Nobody could get any information off of Manfred. And nobody had any idea what Nils' birthday or holiday, destination was. I think there are some theories as to where those would be. I think people are still trying to figure out the birth date, but it's in a smaller community than before. As far as the location, some good ideas were, like, the place that the eBay copy was sold from. Some island off the coast of Germany. Because that would be why they would have a boat that they would take out.
Yeah, and why he might have been there.
Yeah, instead of in the ocean proper. But nothing really came much of that. Eventually, you know, I think a few weeks later, somebody posted on Twitter named Ulrich Alderman that they were an old employee of Opus, and they had an old employee workstation, which had some files from the game. While he, like, tried to upload some files, he tweeted some development documents which had, like, enemy names. I don't remember if there was any important, like, clues or ciphers in that, but eventually he dumped the workstation as what looked to be a ROM, but it, of course, didn't open. Instead, it was a password-protected archive. And players were able to crack the archive before they were supposed to be possible. I'm not sure exactly how, but they were able to open it, and it was a Unity project file that didn't have a working version of the game, but it had the assets for the game.
Yeah.
As well as, I think, some, like, extra emails and stuff like that about the game's development.
I do also like, if I remember correctly, the reason that, like, the in-lore reason that it works in Unity is, like, there's a text file that is very, like, you know, 1990s ASCII art of, like, Unity version 1.3 or some shit. So, like, the implication is that in this universe, Unity, you know, is a game engine that's been around for, like, 30 years.
Yeah. So in the project files, the things I remember were that people found a voice relating to Mother Crow, which people found out was the voice at the start of the playthrough in Adam Butcher's video that says, like, why don't you go talk to him? He's been away from home for days. People found a, like, demonic pentagram, relating to Sir Cat, or no, it's Satanic Circle, or Catanic Circle? Yeah, that's it. Because early magazine scans showed a mention of a plot relating to an evil corporate takeover by the demonic Sir Cat. And that's never present in any of the videos or anything.
Yeah.
Of course, there is the demonic aspects, like the pentagram that he's programming in. But nothing about Sir Cat. Yeah, and then otherwise it was just some asset files, kind of similar to the like, development files. Not a whole lot of info about what is on there is out on the internet, from what I could tell. Might have to go through it again later, honestly. Maybe make a redaction episode.
Yeah, so the fun thing about this episode is that, unlike last episode where we had 2 hours of story, this is an ARG that is, I hesitate to say, still ongoing. It's probably got a niche community still trying to figure it out, but, like, this released October of 2020. It is October of 2021.
Yeah. So, okay, really quick, before we go to, like, that part, I do want to mention one last thing in the files.
Yes, go ahead.
So, there was one thing which was a song called ERS Start. Now, this wasn't present in any of the videos, but there was a secret video that I think was just, like, circle.wmv or something, or just circle, maybe, not the WMV. But that video played the sound ERS Start, and it was of the old crow rapidly ascending through the game until finally at the end the screen goes white. So that is really important for my plot theorizing and extrapolations.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like it's dead in that I don't think Adam Butcher is releasing any more content, but it's hard to say if players have accessed all the content or, you know, they probably have gotten every video. Whether there was more with the archives doesn't seem likely. The biggest thing for me is the emails from Manfred, and I think that's what a lot of the existing, or, like, the still existing community is trying to figure out, is, like, could we have figured out Nil's birthday and vacation to Spot?
Yeah. Also, if you do look this up, don't email the, like, Manfred Lorenz email account. Apparently it's been, you know, just kind of spammed and stuff. I imagine the popularity sort of overwhelmed, basically.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in the community, get in touch with the community first.
Yeah, basically. Like the Discord. I will say that there have been fanzines of, like, fan art made for Catastrophe Crow. I believe they've done 3 of them so far, and Adam and Luke Butcher are really, really big fans of the fans, per se. They like the support. But so, most of Catastrophe Crow, then, is visible in the videos. When I mentioned, like, this is a pseudo-ARG, it's that there was some player interaction, and there was the, like, cracking of the zip files, but it didn't really further the plot that much. I think the video of the old crow ascending through the levels was tied to them opening the zip file archive. Like, it was basically when they do that, they would release that. But otherwise, there's not a lot of, like, players affecting plot, especially not to the degree of, like, Ben Drowned, where players directly had a say in the plot. There were ciphers and codes to crack, aplenty, but I don't think many of them are necessary to get the full picture. Yeah. Some of them are, but not all of them. Like, even the Ocean Quest cipher, which is really clever, is kind of just like, Marta, Nils, Taya, thank you for playing, I miss you, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, this is why this is the second video, is because this is a very good midpoint between ARG and theory crafting video, like ARG and web series, that, like, you know, there is limited player interaction, but a lot of it is sort of seemingly gauged towards, you know, telling a story in abstract through sort of things you can theorize about.
Yeah. I do wonder if there was going to be more interaction planned had players been able to get the email to ML and got him to open up. Because clearly, there was a solution there, right? Like, he wouldn't have just made the character email just to not tell players anything.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is the way he acts specifically sounds like it was a puzzle to be solved, not an extra layer of story that has implications without direct solutions. There is a lot of intertextuality, though, which is, like, I mean, some web series do it more than others, of having, like, multiple pages you have to go to, or multiple, like, characters, or what have you. I think, generally, ARGs have a lot of intertextuality, just that's part of the nature of it, or, like, that's one of the main tricks they do, is going to different websites or different characters on the internet. But this really, like, it uses that for the videos, but it doesn't have, like, alternate web pages you go to. Like, Internet Story, Adam Butcher's previous big video that got kind of viral, that did have a website on Angel Fire that you could go to that didn't really expand the story much either, but it was another website, whereas most of Catastrophe Crow is on YouTube. So I want to talk about what I think the plot is, because I feel like that's where the fun of this comes in.
Yeah.
Other than the, you know, storytelling itself being really well made and the puzzles and stuff, I think the theories of why Catastrophe Crow are fun.
So, okay, let's lay out a basic story with what information we have.
Yes.
So Manfred Lorenz was a prolific video game developer, sort of a strange, you know, eccentric figure. Owned and created Opus Interactive. They made one game and they were going to make another one, and it was based off of his daughter Thea's drawings.
Yes.
His daughter Thea, at some point, like, her health declined majorly, presumably from, like, the fall down the stairs, or maybe just in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, you know, was, like, hospitalized, and eventually she passed.
Right. While she was being hospitalized, Manfred got even more reclusive, spending more and more time away from home, and until basically the day that Taya died, where he lost kind of all interest in finishing the game.
Yeah.
Around that time as well, Marta and Nils left him, Marta specifically leaving him as in divorcing, and by the time Manfred had disappeared, they had been gone for 6 months. Manfred himself eventually laid off the rest of the employees and took the remaining workstations and computers and left off the coast of Germany.
There's also a lot of direct references to, like, the people trying to get money back from him. Like, the monstrous figures are theorized to be sort of, like, directly related to moneylenders and, you know, repo people and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, years later, Adam Butcher acquires a copy and films his playthrough. A number of other YouTube channels post playthroughs, but those are created by Manfred Lorenz. And it turns out he had done this in order to get the attention of Nils so that he could meet up with Nils again. Additionally, he meant for Nils to buy the copy of Catastrophe Crow on eBay, but it fell into the wrong hands. So be more careful when you sell things on eBay, I guess. Also, kind of assumedly, Ulrich Alderman is probably Manfred, because it's unlikely that such a finalized version of Crow would have been with one of the employees. It could have been just a disgruntled employee that happened to have everything.
But, like, it
it's sussy.
Yeah. It's also sus because, like, Lorenz fired everybody and was reclusively working on the game for a very long time. So, like, why would an employee who, all of whom were, you know, laid off, have such a deep build?
Yeah. So,
I feel like that's pretty much the most concrete timeline you can make. Now, I want to go into sort of the theorizing, I guess, the extrapolations.
One level deeper on the iceberg.
Yeah. So, the Eternal Revival system is given a lot of weight and never explained. I think that it was literally meant to revive somebody.
Yeah.
There's mentions of, like, Manfred saying that he was foolish to believe he could copy the intricacies of the human mind with code. I think he wanted to essentially digitize Taya and keep her living that way, but was unable to do so. And additionally, he may have been successful in using it on himself.
Yeah, the assumption that I have been working under is basically that, like, we see the crow, we see the old crow jump off of the boat with a computer, and obviously he is now alive today, responding. And I think he even specifically alludes to the fact that he's, like, at the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so, my assumption and my theory is that he, yeah, like you said, was somehow digitized into the game and is now somehow working off of the hard drive in the ocean.
Right. What you know about a hard drive in the ocean. So, the other points to that are that there was the video of him falling through the layers of the level, and then he's in hell. But when the song ERS Start plays, he ascends through heaven. Or, not through heaven, through the levels. But it has a heavenly ascent sort of air to it. And ERS, Eternal Revival System.
Yeah.
So presumably the ERS is what's meant to revive somebody once they're digitized. And I think the players accessing the Unity files was what finally kickstarted that process. And presumably he could go meet Nils after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are some counterpoints to this. Oh, and also, there's mentions of black magic. It's unclear whether or not that was really true.
Yeah, that's my biggest question, is this... So, like, there is demonic imagery, and, like you said, allusions to black magic. But I think my biggest question is the fiction of this story, normal life-based, like, he's somehow programmed revival into existence? Or is there an element of, like, demons are real?
I think so my interpretation is that there is real black magic, because, I mean, how else could you die and then come back to life? Like, it's
good
not
coding.
Well, it's not even that it's, like, a copy of him made in a computer, and it's not, like, a robot or anything. It sounds like he is meeting Nils in person. So either he was alive the whole time and he never actually died, and he just used jumping into the ocean as a, like, cover story so that nobody would investigate him, or he did die, which means he would need some way to come back to life other than just programming, because I don't think it was technologically advanced enough for him to create a new body after. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wonder if this is a, you know, I hate to say a Ben Drowns idea, but, like, that exact process of, you know, somehow digitizing your consciousness back into reality.
Is it the guy from Winter Soldier that had his consciousness on, like, old, like, punch card machines? Is this a her situation?
Oh, boy.
But yeah, so, additionally, there is the whole thing about Sir Cat and the pentagrams in the game files. I think Sir Cat could have been S-I-R-C-A-T in the sense that it could have been a real villain, because, metaphorically, it would have worked well as a villain that's a cat trying to hunt a crow. And, you know, like, basing the villain off his real-life experience with these, like, debtors or the banks or what have you makes sense. But then, Satanic Sir Cat. Sir Cat sounds like circuit. Circuits are kind of like the runes used in drawing a pentagram. You could think of the lines connecting everything as circuits.
Yeah.
I don't know. My main counterpoints, though, that magic is tenuous, of course. How would the computer survive if it went into the water? Magic, maybe, if it's magic. But it could also be that it never went in the water, and again, it was a cover story. Yeah, a lot of my counterpoints here, though, are more about viewing the story as metaphorical versus literal. So, like, the ascent in the ERS could be him coming to acceptance with the events that happened. The descent could be his descent into reclusivity and depression rather than his descent into a literal hell.
Yeah.
The world changing whenever the player dies, I mean, Manfred's world definitely changed when Taya died, so it could be a metaphor in that sense as well. This is something we'll cover a lot more in detail in the next episode of, like, web series like this don't have to have a concrete solution, but they also don't necessarily not have a solution or an intended canon.
Yeah.
They're open-ended in the same way that, like, the ending of Lost is open-ended. We are in a post-Lost era. Which, like, we're also in a post-loss era, but, you know, that's for another day.
Yes, if you speed this entire episode up, it will look like Lost.
Oh, no.
If you look at the waveforms.
Oh, no.
He
does go into a hospital room. Sees somebody lying on a...
Yeah, that's right. This has all been a Lost reference. You're probably going to have to cut that because of the clap sound.
That's a good point of, like, These are characters
and things that can be very metaphorical, but at the same time, there's still a certain, like, there's still a certain fun, or, like, a certain, what's the word, like, when it just feels good?
Fun?
Catharsis?
Yeah.
A good catharsis to, like, the literal story sort of being found out as well, you know?
Yeah, I'm definitely, I enjoy a good theorizing. A good extrapolation. But, like, part of me also recognizes that these could very well be metaphors. And so I'm trying to at least give that credit as well.
Yeah. Like, it would be, it is, if, you know, Adam Butcher broke all kayfabe and was like, you know, the ascent was him actually going to heaven and you guys saved him. It'd be like, oh, okay, cool. But, like...
Oh. I do also think that the pyramid is an interesting point to this, by the way.
Yeah, because, like, pyramids are, you know, pyramids are where fucking kings and such were buried.
Right, they're tombs, but they also played a process in the Egyptian sort of afterlife process. Like, the whole deal with canopic jars, or the idea of, like, being buried with... I think this is a thing that was actually real and not something a white guy made up. That, like, they would get buried with belongings so they would have those belongings in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Or just the general idea of, you know, the Egyptian mythology of their afterlife and all that. Worth noting that when your ba goes to the afterlife, it has bird wings. I just realized that. Thanks, the artist that also did Sita Sings the Blues. I don't remember their name, but they have good videos. But no, yeah, I want to view it as both a story that has a canon I can discover and a message. I do have other sort of themes I want to bring up that aren't necessarily canon related.
I also like the persistence of the ringing phone.
Yeah.
It hasn't found a literal, like a literal one-to-one sort of thing yet, but it's generally theorized, or at least I think it is, or I theorize it as, like, the phone call that he never picked up telling him that Thea died.
Yeah.
Or at least just, like, you know, general absence from his family.
Yeah, you know, the Mother Crow says, like, he hasn't been home in days, would you go talk to him? And that's what causes, that what kicks off the 64 game. And so maybe that's him getting calls from Marta in general.
Yeah.
And yeah, the fact that the phone rings and then when he gets home to see Taya, the phone's off the hook probably means that, like, whatever bad thing happened while he was getting a phone call.
Yeah, I also really like the whole idea that he was reclusive trying to finish this game because he wanted Taya to finish it before she died.
Mm-hmm.
That has a very, you know... Like, I feel like you could sort of take the I am in a hell of my own makings, like, you could take that sort of stuff literally, but you could also sort of take that as, you know, he, instead of spending time with his family, he worked on the game, and so he never got to experience his family.
Yeah, sort of a cats in the cradle, gift of the magi hybrid.
Yeah.
So that actually brings me to one of my themes I wanted to mention, which was that Catastrophe Crow is a memorial, or in memoriam, that it is based off of Taya, as in, like, her drawings and her life. And even if it didn't have all the stuff about her death, the fact that the character was just based off one of her drawings would be a good tribute in and itself. And it's interesting that Nils and Marta are barely represented in the game, meaning that it's specifically meant to be a tribute to Taya.
Yeah, there's actually an interesting little thing in the original video where the creatures have distinctive heads that are actually separate models, but for one frame, when the player crow jumps off of the desk in the original video, it has the two characters who aren't the player crow and the old crow, who presumably represent Marta and Nils. They have the, like, the money bags head. It's called money bags in the source code.
Yeah,
and like they have the horrifying creature head, and so like it they're. There's probably something there, but it's just like, what does that mean?
Yeah, maybe Manfred had less of a connection with them, or it was based on how Marta was starting to despise Manfred because of his overworking.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Marta did take Nils and leave, so like maybe he sort of thought that Nils and her were, you know, like, I mean, they did in a sense abandon him. So, like, you know, that's probably at least how he felt, of like, yeah. Well, they abandoned me, so fuck them.
Yeah, but also it was unhealthy for him in the first place.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I sympathize with him, just that, like, that would be my assumption of, like, why that little detail is there.
Yeah. Also, though, it does act as a memorial of Manfred, because, you know, even putting aside any sort of afterlife conspiracies... I've been playing Binding of Isaac earlier. It does catalog the development of Catastrophe Crow 64 inside itself.
Yeah.
Because there's the mentions of him working at a company making it while being breathed down his neck by, you know, debtors. It is, it's interesting because, like, so in the interviews Manfred gives, he says that he wants it to be more like Myst than like Mario. He wants it to be like a puzzle game or an adventure game where there are secrets and reasons to explore beyond like video gamey rewards. And it seems like he always wanted the bits about Taya's life and his life to be present, that those weren't like a posthumous decision added after Taya died. And I think that's super interesting to me because it means that he already would have been thinking of this as a way to express his sort of history or his life story in a game format, which actually brings me to another sort of thematic point I want to mention. The other point I want to bring up is that I would have probably liked Manfred if he was real, other than the whole part about abandoning his family, but his ideas he gives off of game design are really interesting and would have been very forward-thinking if he really did exist in 1994 or whatever. Or 97, 90, I don't remember when the N64 came out. But so, like, there's... So, in retrospect, these seem kind of standard things, like video games that have more to explore or have secrets as the primary reason to play them. I feel like that definitely exists nowadays. But, you know, N64 3D cartoon platformer era, it definitely would have been revolutionary.
Yeah.
And everything that we see in the gameplay still would have been pretty crazy to see, pretty clever to see, in-game at that time. Like, you know, the fact that there were, like, these ciphers and stuff, and one of them was given via an item in-game, like, that's showing that he wanted this to be a puzzle hunt in fiction, in universe, in game.
Yeah. Like, that, honestly, that kind of stuff, like, almost sort of mirrors, you know, like you mentioned, stop and swap kind of things.
Exactly. I was going to say, this is, so like, the Rare Witch Project would have loved Catastrophe Crow 64. There's that key, but just in general, like, part of what I think makes Banjo-Kazooie such a special game is the internet fervor that went on because you couldn't unlock those things in game. The like whole stop and swap mythos, it's a lot less prominent nowadays, but you could still find like websites and GameFAQs posts and stuff about it that like, there were all these wild theories about, like, oh, if you go here and do this, you can unlock the ice key. The ice key was a big one, because it was the one that you could see during normal gameplay without having to see the Mumbo photographs.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a web series name. But, like, in some ways, the choice of 3D platformer, I think, reflects that era and that community. Like, it feels intentional.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, one of the games Adam Butcher mentions is Banjo-Kazooie in, like, the video of, like, some of my favorite games from that era still hold up.
Yeah, it like, obviously this is made with the foresight of years after the N64, but, like, the way that, like, the way it contextualizes Manfred as, like, someone who is a visionary of his time is, like, really well done, because, like, you know, it isn't, like, you know, insanely, like, literal 20 years. He's not, like, you know, camera control.
Yeah.
First-person shooters. Like, he is still a visionary, and, like, fits the exact perfect archetype of that era of, like, big personalities. That era of, you know, of fucking John Romero's and such.
Yeah. There's even in the archive, there's a email of him talking to like a lawyer from Nintendo of Europe because he was too worried about the game being too similar to Mario. And the lawyer was like, don't worry, we have cleared this with Nintendo legal and this game is not too similar to Mario. You are cleared to release the game. Miyamoto-san wished you good luck. Also, there is some interesting bits of like game analysis in just the writing of, like, the magazines. One bit is, like, Manfred in an interview mentions how Miyamoto wanted to have the, like, free-running parkour feeling, and Yuji Naka, when designing Knights, wanted to create the feeling of flight, but he felt that neither of them felt like exploring a world the same way you can explore real life. And I think that's so interesting as a commentary on the early attempts at 3D platformers.
Yeah.
And he also mentions Knights isn't a platformer, which is kind of funny. But yeah, it's like, it's interesting in that, like, Adam Butcher, by creating fake video game journalists, has become a video game journalist because I couldn't beat the first level. No, I hate those. Hate those jokes. But no,
yeah. It couldn't be any worse than our current journalist. Anytime you make a joke like that, you have to do it in the Mr. Plinkett voice.
Yeah. Catastrophe Crow 64 is the worst thing since my son, who left with my wife after I spent all 6 years developing Catastrophe Crow 64.
This game would have been better if it was waterlogged.
But no, yeah, it's just really interesting to me that by creating this web series, it's not just an interesting story about love and loss and parenthood and work and art, but it's also a commentary on the landscape of games at the time. And I think that's what makes this so interesting to me, even if there is no solution to the puzzles or even if the ARG is unfinished.
Yeah, if you do nothing else, like, you don't have to watch the video, you don't have to watch any of the other videos. If you want to watch a summary video, it's honestly sort of will give you, like, everything you need, but, like, look up the magazine interviews or something, because they're, like, so perfectly recreated of that era. I have Game Informers from, you know, 2007 or whatever that look literally just exactly like that bullshit.
Yeah, I gotta love a graphic designer who can mimic old graphic design styles with such an ability to, like, put you in the time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, I should mention that the process of exploring to find these secrets is similar to exploring through YouTube videos to find the secrets. That the secret collecting part of the game is still present in the videos that we see and the ARG we play. In sort of the same amount that a player of a video game named Catastrophe Crow 64 would do, is this, like, sort of third-party unearthing and archival of ciphers and codes. Like, the player for this supposed Nintendo 64 game wouldn't email Manfred Lorenz, probably, maybe. But they would solve codes and ciphers. And so the intended gameplay is still kind of there in, you know, our world.
Yeah. Like, honestly, even today, like, there's obviously a whole lot more now. The video game landscape is a lot wider, but even today, I don't know of a lot of games that force you to bust out an actual piece of paper and pen.
Oh, I've actually, I have a few note cards on my table of games I've played, but most of them are, like, puzzle games or adventure games. Shoutouts to Oberdin.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we are in a renaissance of, you know, indie games and creativity. Just look on the fucking itch.io storefront page. You will find a whole bunch of PS1-style horror games, but you will also find a lot of creativity.
Right. Probably the closest thing to this game that exists today would be Outer Wilds. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I love that game. Some of Obsidian's greatest
God
work.
Damn it. Yeah, so this is actually something that bothers me. Except not really, but sort of. This is something I'd have to say about our next game we cover, or next topic we cover. I wish this game was real.
Yeah.
Not as if it was made in, you know, the Nintendo 64 in 1999. I mean, like, if literally Adam Butcher had a working version, I wish that I could play it. This is, again, the same for what we cover next time, is that these people that make video game-based web series, they make the game only enough to where they can make a video. It's more like constructing a set than it is constructing a theme park.
Yeah.
You only make what the person who's watching has to see, so you can cut corners on things like collision or, you know, AI or stuff like that. You can choreograph things. But at the same time, there is a certain amount of, like, you know, I want to see what's over there that I feel when watching this video, that I really wish I could actually play the game to see what's over there.
Yeah, like,
and I mean, you know, things in the background in the distance that kind of hint at something, like in some areas of the toy world, you can see a sailboat way off in the distance. That's cool from that web series sort of mystery standpoint, but I wish I could play the game.
I, you know, that also, that brings up a good-ass point, which is that, like, so when this went up, there had obviously been a whole lot of backlog of videos from different channels. And, you know, those are also full recreations of different levels and different scenarios. And it just makes me think, like, okay, Adam Butcher, I'm fairly certain, did not do all of this by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He had to have had some help.
He at least had the help of his brother Luke Butcher.
Yeah.
At least.
At the very least.
At the veriest leastest.
But, like, that is still, like, that is, he is a filmmaker and a filmmaker's brother, who I don't know what his brother does.
Filmmaker, I think.
Film brother. But, like, they are two people who, like, had to recreate in the N64 style multiple levels and, like, multiple models and stuff. And, like, you can cut corners because, you know, you're not making a full video game, but to quote Dan Olsen, there's certain things that are going to take all week no matter how half you ask them. Like, that is so much effort into, like, recreating that style and that, you know, gameplay look and feel that, like, is absolutely commendable.
Yeah. I think, so, like, you know, again, this will be something we go into more detail in the next episode, but it's not that I want necessarily Catastrophe Crow to be playable. I want something to be playable like this.
Yeah.
Like, a web series that has the, you know, game aspect that is then available for you to play with secrets, or a game that has secrets like Frog Fractions or something like that. You know, just something with, like, really, I guess Fez was like that.
Yeah.
Fez had a bunch of, like, really arcane codes and runes and tricks to, like, get all the collectibles, and that's really cool. Even if I didn't participate in that hunt, I really respect that. I don't know. It's a style of game that doesn't follow conventional game design rules, and so I understand why it's not a common thing, because you can't make money off of it easily. But maybe with a web series, there'd be enough to do? I don't know. I know the web series Cat Ghost had mini games after every episode you could download and play. They were kind of more like Faith, the horror game trilogy.
Yeah.
But those were games that had, like, plot elements you could figure out and stuff like that. And that was really cool, but the series itself wasn't a series about games as much.
Yeah.
Whereas something like this is unequivocally about people playing a video game.
And people creating a video game,
in well, a sense. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a really, really good series. It is a really, really good series for, you know, like, a sort of opener ARG to get the like sort of feel of it without having to go super intense, you know?
Yeah, the ability to recognize ciphers is a big deal with ARGs, or like recognizing when there is a puzzle or there is extra textual aspects.
But also it's like it's a good borderline, because I feel like, you know, a lot of people who get into the theory culture of video games, like, if they saw this and then, you know, saw the community that came up around it to solve the ARG, it could be an easy stepping stone into getting into, like, ARG-style puzzles and gameplay.
Yeah. Also, it's just a good short film if you watch the Adam Butcher video.
Yeah.
Also, Internet Story is a good short film.
You know what else is a really good short film?
Five short films about Springfield?
The
episode of The Simpsons with steamed hams?
No, me farting on command.
Oh, yes. I'm more partial to the web, though. that's another episode we'll have to do. Oh, boy.
God, we will.
Or an entire year. Oh, boy.
Nathan for year. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes. You can follow us on Twitter at NetSurferPro. We tweet out teasers for our upcoming episodes. For this month, I tried putting all of our episodes in one post. And if you're clever, you might be able to find out what our final episode's going to be. I tried to make a teaser for it, but it was probably the hardest of the three to do a teaser for. You can like us and follow us on your favorite podcasting platform. Give us a rating, give us a review, boost us in the SEO, baby. You know, let us know if there's any topics we should cover, stuff like that. Love to hear back. Love some feedback.
Yeah.
And not the audio kind.
If you do tag us, make sure you include popular hashtags.
Yes.
Hey, at NetSurferPro, please do this episode. Hashtag Megan Kelly. Hashtag
Megan Trainer.
Hashtag Megan
Markle.
Hashtag Megan McCain.
Hashtag Megan Fox.
Hashtag Megan from Drake and Josh.
Hashtag Meg from Family Guy.
Hey, where can people find you on socials, Matt?
You can find me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I tweet about my takes, my opinions on things I'm currently checking out, like, you know, comics, TV shows, movies, video games, music, stuff like that. You can also see when I go live on twitch.tv/twack, twitch.tv/twak. I stream Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I play platformers, roguelikes, some competitive games, some fighting games, card games. The new Teamfight Tactics set is coming out, so that's in the air. Do some speedruns. And on Fridays, I play Hitman, but viewers can interact with me, make it harder for me to achieve the goals for that level. So check that out. It's a fun time. I also have a small segment every Monday where I talk about the most recent weekly Shonen Jump chapters. So if you want to hear the weekly Shonen Jump, check that out every... I said Monday, right? I meant Tuesday. Every Tuesday stream. Also on my Twitter, as I mentioned earlier, you can check out my YouTube and SoundCloud and my whole link tree to see all the other places I post my work.
Hell yeah. If you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at Galen Wilson. That's at GALENWILS0N. I post my hot takes and occasionally videos. Have a new one up on my TikTok about, well, you'll see. You can find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. I still have to finish my script, but I think it's coming along pretty good. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. And that's all of my socials.
And with that, see you next week, where we'll finally eat those pizza rolls. I mean, they'll finally eat those pizza rolls.
Yeah, these two podcasters.
Who are in no way connected to us two podcasters. We've said too much.